Now on ABC Radio National, it's time for Counterpoint, an hour of opinion and discussion with Paul Comrie-Thompson and Michael Duffy.
Hello and welcome to the program. It is strange days indeed when environmentalists who usually oppose development actively support building huge power-generating edifices across the countryside. While those conservatively minded country folk, instead of applauding regional development, are dead against it. In a moment, we look at opposition to, you guessed it, wind farms. Also today, David Birchall from the University of Western Sydney joins us for his regular commentary on politics, issues and events. And today, we look at how September 11 changed political thinking across Australia.
And from gunpowder to Jane Fonda, the fantabulous story of Lycra. Now look, a recent edition of the Adelaide Advertiser ran with this story. Lycra, Lycra everywhere, filled by a flock of pretty pollies in their cycling shoes or cleats. Now such a story about the leader of the federal opposition could get a run any day of the week. But behind such stories is the lesser known history of this fibre known as Lycra. And today, anthropologist Carrie O'Connor takes us through her investigations into the world of corsets, nylon stockings, the leggings Jane Fonda made famous, and the connection of all of this stuff to gunpowder. Her investigations, she reveals, drove her to a more nuanced and positive view of capitalism and corporations than is generally found in the academic literature. Now, why is that? Well, to find out, come along for the ride with Lycra, the fibre that shaped America, later in the program. But to begin today's show, Michael, there is some who say all this talk about the wonders of wind power is a lot of hot air. So what's going on?
Wind farms have created enormous conflict in communities around Australia. Some say they're an expensive and subsidised and unreliable way to produce electricity, raising the question of whether they're worth the unhappiness they often cause. These matters and others have just been considered by the Senate Community Affairs Committee, whose report is yet to be made public. Today, we talk to Max Rees, Executive Director of the Australian Environment Foundation. That's an evidence-based group of environmentalists. Our subject is the AEF submission to the Senate inquiry. Max, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
How expensive is it, relatively, to produce electricity from wind?
Well, if we take Grant King, the CEO of Origin Energy's word, and I have no reason to doubt it, he's on the public record of saying that every megawatt of wind power costs between $120 and $130 to produce. Now, if we compare that to the likes of natural gas, and again, he states $54 per megawatt hour, or coal, which is around about $38.
Do you have any idea why wind is so expensive? Wind, after all, is free.
Yes, and that's a good point, and that's one of the parts of the populist narrative that people succumb to, that of course wind is free. We all know that, but it's the turning of the energy that's garnered from the wind into electricity that's not so free. And the reason for that is because of the expense of wind turbines. We're talking about industry benchmark of around $2.5 to $3 million per megawatt to construct a turbine, but it's also the erraticness of wind, the erratic nature of it, that it's only producing power for a small portion of the time, therefore there is not a good use of the capital that's been sunk into all these wind farms. And then there's the renewable energy certificate, which is granted for every megawatt hour that's put into the grid by the energy company, and currently they're around $40-$45. They are supported by the taxpayer. So the taxpayer pays for every one of those certificates, and that's a component of the cost of every megawatt hour of power that's produced by wind.
So is that in effect a subsidy?
Oh, my word.
And a subsidy that makes wind feasible, or at least more feasible than it would otherwise be?
Well, what it's doing, it's turning something that standing on its own is uneconomic and unviable. And it's therefore subsidised by the taxpayer to make it somewhat economic and viable to compare to fossil fuel.
Max, do you know if there's any prospect in terms of the technology getting cheaper in the foreseeable future? We know that nuclear power, there's been considerable improvements in nuclear reactors over the last decade or two. We know that, or we're told that solar power, the technology is improving fairly quickly. Do you know what the situation is with wind?
Well, most commentators regard wind power as a mature technology. There will be some small gains in the design of the actual turbine blades and things like that, but it's a fairly mature technology. It's been around for several decades, and the incremental improvements are small. So one would not expect that there's going to be a major change in the efficiency of turbines.
On the brighter side, maybe, is it at least fair to say that wind-produced electricity does at least cut down some carbon emissions?
Well, again, that's part of the populist narrative, and the facts show otherwise, and depending on who you talk to, you get an answer of there is zero contribution to greenhouse gas emission reductions, or a fairly small, and I tend to be in the camp of fairly small reduction of greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, how can that be, given that this electricity is produced by wind?
Okay, so any wind farm in Australia is rated at around about 30% of capacity. So whatever the nameplate capacity of that turbine is, 2 megawatt, 2.5 megawatt, the expected capacity will be 30% of that, just because of the erratic nature of wind. So a large portion of the time, turbines are operating but not producing any electricity. During this time, they are drawing on the grid because they have air conditioning. They need to keep the machinery cool. Other machinery, these are vast engineering feats, these turbines, these enormous turbines, and they have a lot of machinery that needs to be kept cool and kept operating. While ever the turbine is not producing electricity, it is drawing on the grid.
Okay, so you're saying that even if the blades are not going around, they're not producing their own electricity, electricity has to be provided to these things.
Yes, and they're actually drawing that from the grid. But that's probably the minor part. What happens, because wind electricity or wind energy is so erratic, that they need to be backed up in the grid by open cycle gas turbines, which are running in spinning mode while wind electricity is being generated. As soon as the wind drops away and the grid operator needs to keep the supply of electricity up, those gas generators, natural gas generators, which are in spinning mode, are brought online. But they are, when they're operating in spinning mode, which is a significant amount of time, they are burning natural gas but not producing any electricity. And this is one of the things that offsets any value that wind turbines might make in the reduction of greenhouse gas emission.
What you've told us is interesting. Another question, not quite in the same area, but if a carbon tax or a carbon price is introduced by the government, will that improve the feasibility of wind power?
It'll probably draw it closer to the fossil fuel, because the intention, of course, of a carbon dioxide tax is to make fossil fuels dearer. Which I'm sure that will happen, which is why everybody's concerned about electricity prices going up. Electricity that is generated by coal-fired generators, and to a lesser extent natural gas-fired electricity, will become dearer, so that will draw it closer to the price of wind power. But what we need to remember is that currently wind power is around three times the cost of coal-fired electricity. So if anybody who was keen for a tax on carbon dioxide said, here's the proposition that we're going to make coal-fired electricity comparable with wind power, well, watch out.
Turning to another part of the subject entirely, Max, what effects tell us about some of the major effects that wind farms have on people who live nearby.
A rather distressing series of effects, and what we need to keep in mind is that not everybody suffers from these, which is one of the things that make it so hard to pin down. But what we generally see in communities where wind farms start to operate is that a proportion of the population become affected by low frequency sound and infrasound, and this affects them in numerous ways that mainly relate to headache, loss of balance, racing heart, high blood pressure, waking in fright in the middle of the night, waking up with nosebleeds, these sorts of things which generally make life very unpleasant for people who are living in the vicinity because they cannot escape it.
How close do you have to be to suffer those effects?
Well, that's the subject of study, and we've seen people at anything up to 5 kilometres away. Other people have claimed even further, but it's fairly well recorded that people anything up to 5 kilometres away from wind turbines can be affected.
Max, the AEF it calls itself an evidence-based group. We've heard a lot of evidence over the years for various forms of new technology causing health issues. Mobile phone towers come to mind, for example. I mean, how sure are you that someone who lives 5 kilometres away from a wind farm would suffer those sorts of effects?
Well, I'm sure that people are, because we've spoken to these people, I've talked to them face to face, and we have many documented cases from around the world. What we're saying is that this is a very strong prima facie case that calls out for further investigation and scientific study undertaken by government. That's where we're at. Prove us wrong. You know, if this is not the case, if all these ailments from hundreds of people from all these different countries around the world, different states in Australia, is imagined and there's nothing to do with wind turbines, have the government, who are so keen to expand the wind industry, undertake scientific research that will prove us wrong.
Is there any research claiming that there are no ill health effects?
No. Okay. And that's a very interesting thing, that currently there's not a single credible research paper in the peer-reviewed literature stating that chronic wind turbine noise is harmless to health.
Okay.
So while people say there's no peer-reviewed evidence to say that wind turbines cause harm, to which we agree with that statement, there is no peer-reviewed evidence because there have been no proper studies undertaken, and it's
time someone did it.
Yes, okay. There is not a single government around the world that has yet had completed scientific research to look at this problem.
You said earlier that not everyone who lives within 5 kilometres or whatever the distance might be is affected. Do you have any idea what proportion of people do tend to suffer some effects?
We do, yes. Dr. Daniel Shepherd from New Zealand has done studies, as have other people around the world, and they've identified that it's around about 10 to 15% of the population.
Okay.
And this is one of the things that I came across while researching this issue, that in fact this has been identified, and that's a rather large number when you think about it. 10 to 15% of any population anywhere in the world is more sensitive to noise than the general population.
Yeah, well, I guess one option might be to for the people who set up these wind farms to just simply buy all the properties around, which brings me to my next question. Given the current state of affairs, what effect does a wind farm have on adjacent property values?
This again is argued highly by wind industry supporters, that there is no evidence to show that values are affected. We would contest that and say there is evidence from around the world, and most of it because of the recent nature. And this is again the same with the health issue. This is a very recent phenomena, particularly in Australia. We're only now becoming aware of it. But there's certainly a lot of anecdotal evidence to show that wind farms will have an effect on real estate values. When you talk to real estate agents or look at some of the literature on this, the real estate industry states that the values are set largely by perception in the marketplace on anything, not just wind farms, on anything. The perception of the market is what tends to set the value. And if there's a perception, particularly negative one, such as wind farms or a piggery or a feedlot in the area, that is going to have an effect on the value of any adjacent properties.
Yeah, that would seem to make sense, would it? I mean, for two reasons. One is that they look ugly. I know a lot of people in the city find them deeply attractive, but I've spoken to very few people who actually live near them who feel the same. And then the other thing is these suspected health effects. It would make sense if property values dropped.
Yes, and you've just touched on a point there many of the supporters of wind farms don't live anywhere near them. And so they drive past them on a weekend out and they look, view them from a distance of a few hundred metres and think, wonderful, graceful turbines slowly turning in the rural landscape, and they look wonderful.
Yes, but, no, I've often wondered why they don't put a string of them down the coast of Sydney. There's certainly lots of wind there.
Yes, yes. Well, the effect is more alarming when you live nearby, and that's one of the things that became apparent in the submissions to the inquiry, that many of the supporters had very little to do with turbines or with wind farms.
Let me just finish by asking you about those. I understand there were a large number of written submissions. I think they might have been even approaching 1,000, which is quite a lot for this sort of inquiry. I know you've had a look at a lot of them. Was there a general trend? What did you pick up from that?
Yes, well, I started to read a few of the, and just went through them one by one, and I became intrigued that there appeared to be this two sets of opinions. Those supporting wind farms tended to base their submission on beliefs. They had no evidence or facts to support what they were saying. In the broad sense of most, there were a couple there that had some facts and evidence, but mainly they expounded their beliefs and what they believe should happen with wind power and renewable energy. And they had no experience of wind farms, whereas many of those who were arguing against wind farms and wind turbines had first-hand experience, were alarmed at the prospects of wind farms in their district, and supported their arguments with facts and evidence. And this was a very stark difference between the two lots of submission.
Max Rees, Executive Director of the Australian Environment Foundation. Submissions to the Senate inquiry into wind farms have now closed, but if you want to have your say, you can comment on this story at our website. That's abc.net.au/rn/counterpoint. And the Senate report should be public on the 1st of June 2011.
Still to come on today's show, a cultural biography of Lycra. And up next, David Birchall discusses politics and the Bin Laden decade.